This is the August 12 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists on this USDA report day include Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing out of Champaign, Illinois, Merrill Crowley of Crowley Commodities from Watseka, Illinois, and Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting from Atchison, Kansas. Our special guest today, Steve Freed of ADM Investor Services in Chicago. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. Let's recap the USDA crop production and world agricultural supply and demand estimate numbers for corn. USDA, in its August report, predicts 15.153 billion bushels of the crop will be harvested. That's 613 million more bushels of corn than they had expected when they put those first sets of numbers out in the month of May. They expect that to be on 175.1 bushel to the acre corn yield. Soybeans at 4.06 billion bushels, 180 more million bushels than had been expected earlier in the season, and on the top end of the trade range, the yield at 48.9 bushels to the acre. That's up 2.2 from the May estimate. The corn yield, by the way, was up 7.1 bushels from the May estimate. These numbers would leave us with new crop ending stocks of 2.4 billion bushels in the bin by the time we get to next fall for corn, and 330 million in the bin for soybeans.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
Again, you're listening to the August 12 edition of Commodity Week. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Bill Mayer, Merrill Crowley, Mike Zuzulo, and Steve Freed. Steve, of course, is with ADM Investor Services. Steve, I think I'd like to start with you this afternoon. Can you tell me your quick assessment of the reports and the numbers you saw?
Well, I think three things. I think, first of all, when you saw the numbers, the 175 corn yield, the 15.1 crop, the almost 49 bean yield, the 4060, and compared to the average trade guess in last year, you thought it was bearish. And I think that the initial trade reaction was bearish. Number two is the market came back. And I think that when we look at the USDA's estimate of this year's bean carryout here, at 255 versus 350, that was supportive. And when we start diving into the numbers and figure out how much production globally is down this year versus, let's say, earlier estimates, and that demand's up almost 18 million tons from earlier estimates, you have a lot of demand supporting us underneath the marketplace. And that, I don't have any problems with after harvest beans trying to rally during this record demand pace of the United States. But it will be tough to get back to the season highs in the beans just because you've got a lot of beans around. And I think the farmer would be a willing seller on the upside. Over in the corn, I think that what's interesting to me is that they used a pretty high ear weight. And if you go back and use an average ear weight, your yield would actually be closer to 169. Than the 175. So you're going to hear some people talk about, okay, if I walk into a field and don't pull the husk back, the yield is this. But if I go into the field, especially late planted varieties and areas where it might have been hot at night and we had a little bit of this tip back, they may say, maybe we won't get these big yields that USDA is saying, and that maybe this might be the highest yield estimate of this crop year. You still have a lot of corn. Farmer has a lot to sell, so the rallies will be limited on the upside, but I do think that between now and next spring, the corn market's going to rally to try to feed corn into the pipeline. And a side note, I was at an ag summit yesterday, and the fertilizer group there, talked about low fertilizer prices, talked about low revenues, and said that next year, they're guessing that U.S. farmers will plant 88 million acres of corn versus 94 this year. So maybe the cure for low prices continues to be low prices. But globally, we have a lot of grain. We have record demand. And we've got to find some kind of price, I think a little bit above here, that, you know, we're going to keep grain to the pipeline, and but can't go too high because it's just got a lot of crop out there.
Merrill Crowley, Steve Fried points to the objective data that was collected by USDA as it relates to ear weight and population numbers, suggesting that the ear weights are awfully heavy. I've seen that a couple of times on social media feeds throughout the day today. Would you say that would be the case in your part of the world? You might be along with us here in East Central Illinois in one of the garden spots across the Corn Belt, and there are more than a few, but this is an awfully good one.
I have to agree. It looks awfully good. I'm still getting reports that some of this is not as good inside the field. And the other thing I'm seeing is there are some varieties out there that did not pollinate as well as the others. There's been several instances of that. Is that enough to really change it? Possibly. And from my standpoint, I really do find it hard to believe that we can have that large a crop. You know, if we'd have had a cool, wet summer, I'd have no problem, you know, with this crop being a record crop. But being the hot, wet, just I have some problems with that. And add into addition to that, there was only two states that didn't have higher yield, and none of them were to the east of us. So, you know, there again, I just have a feeling that we're looking at a high watermark. Trade today also tends to agree with that. You've got a bullish reversal. It's a key reversal right now. And if that holds, you know, and you can break, say, 336, 336, then you are looking at a rally maybe getting up to about 365. So, you know, it's awful early to be setting in stone what this yield is, but it looks to me to be high side.
Bill Mayer, he did mention, and in fact it did happen for the day, that while the trade saw numbers from the United States Department of Agriculture that were on the top end, even outside of the trade range just barely, it did trade lower, but it performed very well. Did this surprise you very much, and why do you suppose that was the case?
Well, I think there are several things involved in that, and one is just the argument is, yes, it's a big crop, but is it bigger than what was being perceived? And, you know, we have the trade average guesses out there, but as you said, it was both the crop, total crop size and the yield were within the range, basically. So that number's been out there, and I think the carryout number is the real factor. I mean, if you look at how much above the average trade guess the crop size was, and then look at the fact that the carryout really only increased a little over 300 million bushels, still a big carryout, don't get me wrong, and I agree with what Steve said, that's a lot of corn we're going to have to deal with, but I think the fact that the usage increased so much was a factor as well, especially on the bean side, but even on the corn as well. I believe the real issue here as we move forward into harvest is going to be the logistics and putting this crop away, and that's what the farmer has to deal with now. Because according to my calculations, I think the biggest supply we had on hand, if you take the carryout number and add to it the crop size, was 2014, of course, and we're about 1.4 billion more bushels of corn on hand this fall than what we had in 2014, if that's the case. I mean, if the USDA is correct on their numbers here. So I think, you know, if you remember in 2014, we got that crop put away pretty good. Bases actually improved as we moved through harvest. People were a little bit surprised that they handled it as well as they did. I think it's going to be hard to expect that to happen with this crop if we actually have that many more bushels. We probably have more storage built since 2014, but I'm not sure enough to handle it. So I think that's really where a farmer has to focus is, you know, how do I get this thing? I don't want to be forced into making sales. I don't want to, you know, pay high storage rates. And how do I get through that harvest period?
Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. What's your analysis of the corn numbers from USDA?
I think the biggest thing, you know, and tailing in with what Bill was just talking about was 2014. It sure seems a lot like 2014 to me, Todd. And in October of 2014, USDA came out with a 174.2 national yield. They brought the carryover up just under 2.1, and they had almost the identical average price, 310 to 370, that we were carrying last month. And then we started to see that number come down. And one of the things that has been a real problem for me the last 2 years, but especially in 14-15, is we essentially went from a 2.1 billion bushel carryover in October of 14 down 350 million bushels to 1.73 by the time we got done with the marketing year. And so we had a 17% cut in carryover from the harvest time period. The similar thing happened last year. So I guess my point is this: the way that we kept world stocks to use in corn and beans underneath last year, last marketing year, was because of what Steve and Merrill were talking about when it comes to the demand, the global demand. That's a major difference that we have in our camp versus what we had in 14. If we could get USDA to find a lower yield number in September, or we could have a pro farmer tour coming up here that shows a substantial difference in opposition to what USDA just gave us, I think the market has the likelihood to react in the corn very quickly. And I would say that even more aggressively if we could form a technical low in the soft red wheat. That was one of the things that really held us back in 14 was the wheat market, like it is this year. So close above 440 in soft red lead month wheat would go a long way, especially if we get some yield numbers that would bring us back. I've got very good colleagues and friends in the crop insurance and farming business in Ohio and Indiana and Illinois, all the way to eastern Kansas and key areas that are saying they're losing yield by the day. They're sending pictures, and I'm sure the rest of the guys are getting these. They're sending pictures of tip back, and Merrill mentioned aborted kernels. That's very prevalent up around 24 in Illinois right now, and this lagging pollination that came in after July 4th holiday seems to be hurting those in the southern third of Illinois as well. So I think this year has the potential for maybe a little bit better than a range-bound trade before harvest if we can get a couple things working in our favor.
Just offhand, you mentioned the Pro Farmer Tour. That is set for Monday the 22nd, and the rest of that week I've already scheduled Chip Flory and company to join us on the closing market report and commodity week for that week. Steve Fried, how is demand building in the corn market? You suggested it could do the job, and Mike gave us an example of 2014. Where it dropped dramatically, the ending stocks. Could we see the same thing this year, do you think?
Well, I think that when you look at the USDA's numbers, you know, when you have a big crop, they always plug something in the residual, and they've got it about 475 million bushels above a year ago. And when you start talking about feed intensity and maybe a little competition from feed wheat and the animal numbers and things like that, you probably wouldn't but that much. But, you know, they have exports up to 2175 million bushels. That's a battle between, you know, Brazil's crop, getting some business out of that, and versus the Black Sea corn being cheaper and all this feed wheat in the world. So, you know, their export number in corn is probably an okay number, still has to be proven. Ethanol usage, you know, there's a lot of debate going on there. We're using more other products like sorghum for ethanol, and these new corn varieties are coming out with a higher yield from ethanol. So it'll be kind of interesting. You know, when you talk about a 14.5 billion bushel demand versus 13.7 this year, that's a pretty impressive increase. But when you have a 15 billion bushel crop versus last year and a carryout of 2.4, that seems to, at the end of the day, might trump that. And I don't really see anything down the road that's going to make these numbers get any bigger. And so, you know, we'll just kind of try to see, I think the big thing, you know, obviously is the final yield. And, you know, if it comes down a little bit, but probably more importantly is the farmer going to sell. You know, you just hear, you know, a lot about corn prices below break even, farmer trying to store as much as he possibly can. Prices should, you know, I think we all agree prices should rally into 2017. So if he can find the storage and hold it off the market, then all of a sudden this 15 billion crop plus the 1.7 billion carry-in doesn't feel as big. And, you know, the market's going to have to go either from a spread standpoint or a basis standpoint to try to get this corn moving. So, I mean, I think it's more importantly is how fast the supply come to the market than actually what the demand numbers are.
Hey, Merrill Crowley, I'm thinking about one item on the supply side that might create a problem as you look forward. Do we worry very much about the effect that Macri in Argentina has had on the potential for more corn acres to be planted there?
Well, it's certainly going to compete with us, but offsetting that, you have a tight situation in Brazil. So it's going to be a while since we get the competition from them. So I think the lesser crop in Brazil will more than offset what the more acres you might see in Argentina. And you've also got to remember, with the way their economy is, it's going to be somewhat difficult for farmers to get loans. And same with Brazil. Those economies are hurting, and whether or not the farmer is going to get enough money to expand will be a big determinant in how much they plant.
What do you think, Merrill, about the size of the U.S. soybean crop? USDA says it's a really big one. August is the month, and we're going to get rains across the bulk of the Midwest this week. And can we raise this size of a crop?
Well, the only time we're going to find that out is when we get the combines running, for sure. There's two things that I see going on right now, and that one of them is from some of the customers telling me that the spacing of the pods is way far apart, which is not uncommon when you have such a large amount of bean growth. The other issue that I'm hearing talked about is I noticed a lot of burnt beans early this spring on the post-application for herbicides, and I'm getting stories on that about how some of those just aren't potting, you know, because they just got evidently burnt too badly when they put the chemical on. So, and you also have the problem, if we don't get these rains, and I'm seeing them pop up as we speak, but if we don't get the rains that are being forecast across the eastern part of the belt, I think you're going to see that bean number drop as well. So I think it's just awfully hard to come up with anything accurate on bean yield. All they're doing is looking at the condition report, and the lush beans look great from the highway, and they're coming up with a yield. And I think they have to almost justify how high they've kept the condition rating to come up with those bean numbers at this time of year.
Bill Mayer, I don't know whether you would agree or not, and you can let me know. If the storage for corn is the proper thing, and if it is, that means producers probably don't have adequate room for their soybean crop. What do they do with both of them?
Well, I think the soybean crop is a little bit easier situation. I think that we still, after today's market, have, you know, the technical potential there to try to move up and get into that $10 plus futures for November. So, you know, somewhere close to $10 cash in this part of the country. You know, if you can make those kind of sales numbers, I think you still do that, and your profitable levels to do that. You can manage ownership through an option of some kind or something if you want to go that route. So I think the one of the objectives from the farmer's viewpoint is to probably try to generate cash flow and manage some of the logistics with the crop that's showing the most profitability, which is the soybean. So move them first, I guess, would be my suggestion. The other, on the corn side of it, the storage, that's where I was going before with the logistics. I think that if, especially for those people that are taking crop to town, to commercial storage. We've had some pretty good basis levels around here for fall, and in especially in the eastern part of the belt, and even in some of the western states where fall, as we did our conference call here yesterday, I was a little bit surprised in Nebraska and some parts of Minnesota with ethanol plants where basis levels for fall were. So if you can get some ability to lock that part of it in so that you can avoid those commercial storage costs, I think that's probably a good idea. You can use a put option or something to manage your downside risk if you'd like to. But I think that makes more sense than just planning on going into harvest and paying the commercial storage rates, because you probably see this thing extended as far as what Steve was saying earlier, as far as rallies getting sold. I think that continues right on into the, you know, post-harvest period probably.
Mike, it is going to be difficult for producers to hold on to all of the crop. What do they do with that crop that they really just either have to market for cash flow needs and or that they simply don't have a place to store?
It's a very good question, because we have seen quite a bit of basis widening here in the last couple weeks. I was noticing Morris, Illinois, going from something like positive 6 to negative 12, so essentially an 18-cent widening. And that's with, you know, pretty steady to weaker futures market. So that has been a very big point of contention in the recent trade, Todd. So I would say that you need to replace the bushels that you have to sell, but I would do it in known cost, and I would probably stick it out into the March 17 contract in terms of bought calls. If we do use, and I am recommending this with the clients and subscribers I work with, to use the 2014 model year as the way to go from a standpoint of how you manage this risk between dumping cash bushels and reowning. We made our major low in the D's 14 right at the stocks report in September. Wheat made a low right around mid-September, and then the corn made its low right at the stocks report. And, you know, 2014 futures did very well after the stocks report came out. We ended up closing right around 396 and a quarter, I should say, expiring at 396 and a quarter in that DEES contract of 2014. So that's kind of how I'd recommend playing it. And I guess I'd like to go back 1 minute for what I thought Steve and Bill both had a really good point just now. It made me think maybe what we're talking about here is there's no question that the supply is heavy. And it's about supply when it comes to getting upside prices. But we do have other areas of the country other than the United States that have had some problems and continue to be kind of running on the thin line of whether they're going to have a good crop or bad crop. And India and China are two of those areas, northern China and central India especially. And so while demand puts lows in, and I think that's what we saw today in the crop report, was this big supply came in, but yet the stocks to use ratios held in there very nicely. The demand put the lows in. It really is going to be up to the supply for these marketable prices that get us back above break even.
One thing I noticed as I was going through some of the tables in that, if you look at the world ending corn supplies, China has about 47% of the ending stocks for, according to the projections came out today. So I think that's an issue as we look at the global side of things, that 47% of the ending stocks are in China. And who knows the quality, who knows, you know, the ability to get those to move into the system.
Do you think they're in good enough condition that they can be used, or will they fade from the paper, so to speak?
Well, I wish I knew the answer to that, but the only inside data that we have is as they try to sell these reserves, you notice that very few of the reserves actually, when they auction them off, very few of them get sold. And I don't know if that's telling us that maybe the quality isn't there or exactly what it's telling us. Unfortunately, we don't really know the answer to that.
They'd be really good. They'd be good stocks to build islands in the Yellow Sea.
Hey, let's get a quick final word, and it'll have to be short from each of you. Steve Fried from ADM Investor Services, I think I'll start with you.
Okay, the report's behind us. USDA's got an average cash soybean price, $835 to $985 at the higher end of the range. You probably should sell some cash and replace it with options. The average corn price, $285 to $345, and I think that, again, it'll be hard to push prices too much above that level because you've got so much corn to sell. Outside markets, the economy is slowing down. You've got pressure for the Fed not to raise rates, which moves money from the commodities into the equity side, and that may not get help us. We've got the election coming up, which is seems to be slowing our domestic consumption and slowing our economy down. And then China seems to be buying beans, and the reserve program isn't really going as good as some people had thought or feared from a bearish standpoint. So the demand side is still a bullish factor.
Merrill Crowley, very quickly, please.
If I was looking at whether I was going to do options, sell something and do an options, I guess I'd be looking more at doing it with corn, simply because I don't see the corn spreads and the basis improving that much after harvest, especially for this large. On the beans, I think you could get a really good basis improvement on beans held.
Hey, Merrill, I also think you wanted to say something about prevent plant in the USDA figures.
90.36 corn, 81.37 soybeans, 47.5 wheat. What surprised me is the 1 million prevent plant in corn, and then there was a 1.78 million prevent plant on wheat. Soybean prevent plant was only 237,000.
And Bill Mayer.
I would agree with what's been said. I think you have to consider what's the most economical way for me to maintain ownership, and every situation is going to vary on that, but using cash sales with call options is certainly one avenue to use.
Mike Zuzulo, your final word.
I don't think the trade was really convinced or bought into which way the beans were going to close Friday. We opened and closed at the exact same point, Todd, after having an outside day. First couple days of next week will probably tell us a lot about the near-term trend and whether we want to try and go up and test some upside levels and maybe make some advanced sales here as we go into the final part of the summertime. Steve, what are you using for a yield for your final?
Well, from day one, I guess I've been using 171 and 48, and so I think that's kind of where things are going. You know, if I'm a farmer and I'm sitting there and if I buy into these numbers, what are next year's yields going to be? I mean, if we're up 7 this year, if we're up another 7 next year, oh my gosh. Anyway, I think that we're very lucky that the first half of this crop year, we're going to have record demand. And I think that that keeps us from going to zero. And then we'll have to see after that what happens in South America. You know, talking earlier about acres, gosh, I mean, that they could actually drop bean acres, and especially in Argentina. That might bail the farmer out again if we have another increase in global demand for protein. So, I'm very surprised that the market didn't react more negative to these numbers. And so maybe that means that demand is more important.
I agree. So, Steve, in Argentina, the relative price of corn versus beans, will that enter into the farmers' decisions as far as number of acres planted?
Yeah, I think we're hearing like 8% to 9% swings just because of the export tax and the new administration promised a drop in 5% in the beans and haven't done it yet, and farmers are still holding on to the beans, and so that if he comes through, that we may not see as many less bean acres, more corn acres as what we're penciling in. Brazil's a mess, and that with the corn prices in Brazil, we could see a 2% drop in bean acres in Brazil.